Accession number 18499, Reel 3.
John Aldridge, Reel 3. So, the next raid, 4th of November,
yes,
on the Dortmund Ems Canal. Any recollections,
recollections of that? Recollections of that? Only thing I can remember is, of course, relatively short for us. It was a clear night, and everything went to plan, and there was not a bit of trouble. I can remember that was... We thought, you know, it was only a few days before, because you weren't given time for recovery. You didn't get sort of a... counselling or anything in those days after you crashed or anything like I do nowadays, but that was a straightforward raid, that one. As you see, it was only about 4 hours, I think.
And then 6th of November, the Ems-Weser Canal.
Yes, there, of course, there's two canals there. There's a Dortmund Ems and the Ems-Weser. These parts we bombed were the viaducts where the canals were carried over the land, and obviously if you hit them and opened them up, or they drained. Well, this is an absolute contrast. We got there, and Pathfinder, we couldn't see any flares, one or two flares in the distance, and nothing at all. I said, Ken, I can't see anything, can you? I said, no, I don't know what's going on. And then the controller came on, and he was shouting for more light to the east, telling the other Pathfinders. No target indicates to be seen or anything. So he told us to orbit, 160 of us to orbit, just north of the Ruhr, which is a good place to orbit. And we orbited for 10 minutes, a quarter of an hour, and I saw about 6 aircraft go down, I think. Here there'd be one light in the sky, because the fighters were up, obviously. And we orbited for about a quarter of an hour, and he scrubbed it, because that night, funnily enough, all the equipment on the mosquito markers and the Pathfinders dropping flares, they'd had equipment failure on a grand scale for some reason, and they just couldn't light the target, and the mosquitoes couldn't mark it. So he scrubbed it, and we came back home and had to drop some bombs off again, and this time we got diverted again to our local aerodrome at Norwich, Horsham St. Faith, which is now Norwich Airport, which is an American base. And it was pouring rain. And we thought, well, I hope Ken gets in all right this time after the last effort. And we came in, and oh, it was a terrible night. And we landed all right. And we thought, oh, smashing American base, plenty of lovely food here and all that sort of thing. And we had to queue in the rain. Well, they found us a hut to sleep in. We had to sleep on the bare floor, almost. Odd mattress. And... next morning we went for breakfast, and I can always remember it. Breakfast consisted of probably waffle things and a dustbin full of hard-boiled eggs. You just have as many hard-boiled eggs as you wanted. And we, you know, everybody said, you'll get to an American aerodrome, you'll have lovely food. Well, I'm afraid we missed out on this time. And of course I was hoping we might be stuck there for a day or two and I could get home, but no such luck, we were away next morning again. But that was that one. But that was a night, I think they lost about 10 aircraft that night, you know, orbiting.
Did that affect morale much?
Well, no, you felt a bit muffed about it. I mean, obviously, but you knew very well that there must be some reason for it. I mean, the Pathfinders were pretty hot on, usually. And, I mean, our system was, in those days, was that, because we had on 5 Group, they used to call it later on Butcher's Independent Air Force, 5 Group. He detached 2 Pathfinder squadrons, Main Force Lancaster squadrons, from Pathfinder Group. That was in previous April, as it happened, April 44. And a squadron of mosquitoes for doing the marking. And the group mostly flew independently from the Main Force of Bomber Command. And... the flare force used to light the targets up, and mosquitoes would aim, not drop them on the bomb site, aim their aircraft at the aiming point and mark it in that way. But that night, there's only one that dropped his markers, and they went into the canal itself and were extinguished, which was unusual. So So, I mean, we just had nothing to aim at, and as I say, the controller scrubbed it after about a quarter of an hour.
And then, 11th of November, Operation on Harburg.
Yes, that was just on the outskirts of Hamburg. It was an oil, supposed to be an oil target, a refinery. And I remember from that the flak was very, very thick that night. And we were flying into the target, and that was the only time. I mean, they used to say that they used to put up scarecrows, things in the sky that looked like an aircraft exploding. But after the war, they reckon the Germans say they never did anything like that. What we saw exploding were aircraft. You know, they did for morale's sake, these things. But I was approaching the target, and there's one just above me at the top, straight ahead above. And there was just one great explosion and pieces falling down. I think that must have been an aircraft or something. And I think the bombing operation itself went well, apart from those difficulties. But you relatively hadn't far to go in at Hamburg. You were soon out over the sea again, you see. You didn't have a lot of passage over land to get to the target there. That was successful, I think.
Then 21st of November on the Ems-Weser Canal again.
Yes, we went back this time because we couldn't do it the last time you saw. And this was a night we lost two aircraft in the squadron on that. And one of them, often the group captain, the actual station commander, was flying that night. Group Captain Weir, marvellous man. After the war, he was the in charge of the Christmas Island Operation Grapple when they dropped. Our squadron 49 dropped the hydrogen bomb. He was an air commodore by that time. He flew, and they went down, shut down. Another crew went down, but his story is quite unusual. They must have been hit over the target because he only remembers. There was no other member apart from him survived. He only remembers being flung out of the aircraft in his with his parachute and pulled the ripcord, and he landed actually in the canal itself. And he managed to get out, and he evaded for two or three days heading towards Holland. And they eventually picked him up. I thought he was a mosquito pilot or something like that. I didn't realise he'd come from, because he got several miles away from where the target was. And they eventually found out who he was, and I always remember them saying he reckoned that they knew exactly where he was station commander and how many aircraft he had. There was another squadron, 189 with us. How many aircraft of each squadron he had. No end of detail of it, you know, which has amazed him, I think. But that was that. But apart from on our side, we had no difficulty on that raid, I know.
Then into December the 10th on the Heimbach Dam.
That's it, yes. That was this was to help the American advance. That was way up in the Eifel area, this was, Germany. We were supposed to burst this dam before the Germans burst it. And to stop the Americans, they were hoping that if we burst it, that would flood, and then the floods would have gone down by the time the Americans wanted to make their advance, because they were sure the Germans were going to burst this dam to stop them advancing any further. And we went this time, it was very difficult because there was a lot of patchy cloud, and when a bomb and a dam isn't a very big target, really. And I can remember you had to quickly pick up the target because of the patchy cloud conditions. And of course we bombed it. I didn't think it was very successful. You couldn't see many bombs bursting on the dam. And obviously it wasn't, because we went back again shortly after that. I don't know, was that the time we got devoted to Lasham?
Well, you've put recalled in brackets.
Oh, another one we recalled, weren't we? Yes.
But the following day, you've got a day operation to the Heimbach Dam.
That's right, yes. We went this time again. Oh, that, yeah. And I don't think, they never did burst the dam anyway. I don't think they helped the Americans much.
And actually on the 8th, you had a day operation on the Heimbach Dam, which was diverted.
To Lasham in Hampshire, I think. I remember that. It was only a small airfield for us, really.
Then the 17th of December on Munich.
Yes, that was a long trip. The first thing to happen, we crossed the coast at Worthing, somewhere near Worthing. And I remember we just got across the coast and there was a colossal explosion behind us on the shoreline. And we thought, oh, God, somebody's gone down, it must have been. And we went to Munich, a long trip, about 9 hours or so. I did two trips to Munich, I see there's one later on. Well, that one, we used to either go in fairly low and use the Alps as a screen, and then into Munich, or we used to go in from the other way and then use the Alps as a screen going out again. But I think we went in from the north side this time, and I think there was a fair bit of cloud, if I remember, and I don't think it was a successful raid. We didn't get too much interference with us as far as defences go, the usual flak, but because they always used to say that Munich had more guns per head of population. I'd say they had more guns in Berlin and places like that, but had more guns per head of population because Hitler's favourite town, whether that was true. But that was sticky, heavy anti-aircraft defence there. And I can always remember going there because the main force was bombing Ulm, and our route took us south of Ulm. They were bombing it earlier than we were getting to bomb Munich, so that split their night fighter defences up a bit. And I can remember seeing Ulm burning over the distance over to the starboard, off to the port side. Apart from that, that was quite easy. Average sort of run. Then quite different from the next Munich raid, as you'll see later on.
Then the following day, the 18th, on Gdynia.
Yes, the next day, that was, wasn't it? 9 hours that day and 9 hours the next time. We went to Gdynia to bomb, I think there were two aiming points. One was the harbour and one was a certain German battleship, I can't remember the name of it, in the harbour. Some people went to that and we went to the other part. Yes, that's quite interesting. We went across Sweden on that trip. Neutral, of course. And we were told we could use our H2S that night, which we did over Sweden. Once we hit the Swedish border, we could use H2S all the way across Sweden. But not anymore. As far as the target side goes, I don't think there was very, very little defence there. Of course, Gdynia was way up the Baltic, and I don't think they expected too much air activity there. But the night fighters were quite active over the Baltic. And the reason they reckoned, how true it is, that we were allowed to use H2S, because a German night fighter had defected to Sweden with some of this Naxos equipment on. And they were going to allow Swedes were going to allow this aircraft to be flown against us for us to sort of simulate what sort of equipment it had. But how true that was, I don't know. But I always remember there was anti-aircraft came up from Karlskrona, which was a point down where we turned across the Baltic down south. They just waved it in the sky. They didn't really fire at us, I don't think. We came back across Sweden again, going back. But that's the main thing I remember about Gdynia and the length of the raid, trip, of course. And when I look at that book and think, we were going about 9¾ hours one night after the next, wearing.
Then 28th of December to Oslo Fjord.
Yeah, well, in the meantime, just before Christmas, I'll just say that before I come to that raid, we were spare crew one night to go to Politz, which is near Stettin. I did bomb it later on, a big oil plant over in the Baltic near Stettin. And we didn't have to take anybody's place, so we didn't go. And that was just before Christmas. Of course, Christmas 44 was terrible Christmas. I mean, all the continent was under snow and there was thick fog here, and the fog all came down and they were diverted up, the whole squadron was diverted up to Dyce, north of Aberdeen, which is now Aberdeen Airport. And we were hardly anybody on the station, you see. And of course, at that time, the Battle of the Bulge was going on, and they were getting a bit panicky whether they were going to break through on the Battle of the Bulge. But anyway, we were there for Christmas. Christmas Day, they stood us down, and we went Christmas Eve to Nottingham. And so you better be back next morning. And we went. Somebody had a car this time, and we went to Nottingham in the car. We had the night in Nottingham. We came back the next early hours of the morning. Conditions were dreadful. It was freezing, fog, and ice on the roads. And we got as far as Syston, which was between Nottingham and Newark, on our way back to Fulbeck. And we phoned up from there to say, is there anything going at the moment? Because I said, we ain't got to get back very soon. And they said, no, nothing doing. So we got back to the station eventually during the morning, Christmas morning. And we did the usual, where we served the airmen their meal and Christmas night with the Sufu on the squadron. We had a wonderful time in the mess. And we staggered back to our billet. And at 4 o'clock in the morning, I came round knocking up. Ops on the morning. You got a briefing at about 6 o'clock. We'd had a night. And we went to briefing. And that was for the Bulge. We'd got a bomb some fifth, I think it was, where the Germans were breaking through. And if at all possible, every aircraft that could get off the ground had to get off, because the fog was down and it was absolutely roaring frost all over the aircraft. We hung about until 10 o'clock, and finally they did had to scrub it, which is a good thing, because we weren't in any good condition for flying. And we were stuck there till the squadron arrived back just after Christmas. They were there about 3 or 4 days. And that was Christmas 1944. You see, the Continental aircraft, tactical forces on the continent, just couldn't fly because the conditions were so bad.
Then, as I said, it's this Oslo Fjord raid.
Yes, that was the one where we were going to bomb at Horten in Oslo Fjord. The German cruiser Cologne. There was only a few of us, about 60 aircraft, which is few really for the size raids we did in those days. And we had a special lot of flares were going to be dropped so we could light up the fjord. Well, they lit it up to some extent, but all you saw was shapes really down below. And occasionally, if one of the ships put up flak, you would see the tracer from where it was. So anyway, you really had to aim your bombs at a shape in a way. And we bombed what we thought was the biggest thing we could see, and that was that. Do you want me to tell you the tale of that?
Please, yes, if you can repeat what you were telling me.
Yeah. Well, there's a big, after a 50-year gap, I got another tale to tell about that, right? Because apparently there was a flotilla of submarines off Horten, and they'd been ordered out the next day to attack the shipping on the entrance to the channel going to the Second Front. And they use Oslo Fjord a lot because the Baltic was the biggest U-boat training ground, but it hasn't got the depth that Oslo Fjord has, so they can't test their pressure so much as they can down in Oslo Fjord. They couldn't get so great a depth in the Baltic, so this lot were down there testing their hull pressures and that sort of thing before they went off. Well, apparently what we'd bombed were submarines and a tanker. One submarine was sunk, and one, the U-682, was badly damaged at the bows, so she bent the bows. She couldn't travel underwater, so they were ordered back to Hamburg for repairs, and the other lot went off. Well, the others went off to the channel, and not one returned, nor one man. So this U-682 was back in Hamburg, and it took till March to be repaired. They were then ready for sea again, and our probably 617 and those type with the big bombs bombed Hamburg U-boat yards and destroyed this U-boat. So they didn't get to sea again in this one. But now, after German unity, when the wall was taken down, they managed to get all the crew together for a reunion. And they decided that they were so grateful that they'd survived by being damaged up in Oslo Fjord that they researched the crews that had taken part in this raid and would like to invite them for their next reunion, which they did. And Tom Gatfield, our association secretary, and one or two more people, their wives, went to this first reunion, and they took it to one side and said, you know why we've invited you here? That's just to thank you for saving our lives by bombing us in Oslo Fjord, which was a most unusual thing. And I went the next year for a reunion with Tom, three of us, our flight engineer joined us then, so the six of us, our wives went to this reunion on the Moselle. Beautiful hotel, they'd laid on river trips for us. We went to Koblenz, up the castle, cruise on the Rhine, wonderful do, beautiful meals. We also had a competition at the end of one day, what they call the Olympics, where we took part in bowling. There's a bowling alley there, hoops, putting things over hoops, target shooting with a crossbow, and the winners used to, of each group, received a bottle of champagne, and they gave us a wonderful time there. And
did your Lancaster attack this U-boat?
Yes, well, I assume so. Of course, they've researched it, and they've got the times of attack on these U-boats that, from their logs. They managed to find their logs, or copies of their logs, and they've also got copies of our squadron records of the time of bombing, and that looks to me as though one of those is where I may have been helped to damage this U-boat. So whether that's true, I don't know, but you just have to take that as a chance.
Next is December the 30th on Houphouët.
Yes, well, this was the Battle of the Bulge time. Houphouët is now, if you come up on the motorway up to Belgium from Luxembourg, you pass over. This was a narrow valley in the Ardennes, Houphouët, which was a bottleneck for German armour and transport. And we went at night from about 5,000 feet, I think, and bombed this bottleneck to assist in the Battle of the Bulge. I know it was a very relatively low attack, and I mean we could see the target indicators and sensors. So what damage we did, I don't really know. But that was assisting with the Battle of the Bulge.
Then 1st of January 1945 on Gravenhorst,
yes,
diverted to Peterhead.
Yes, that was in the day. Part of the group had been to this other one, the Dortmund Ems Canal. This was the Ems Weser Canal, and bombed that in daylight. And we were part of the force that went out tonight and at night and to bomb this other section of the canal. And it was a good night, and I think it went very well. And I believe I got an aiming point that night on the canal. I still have my bombing frame photographs, which I pinched when I left the squadron.
So why were you diverted?
Well, weather clamp. We came up, I remember that, we came up to the south coast route home, across somewhere, Sussex, and just as we were crossing the coast, we were thinking, oh, another half hour or so, we'll be back. We got a diversion all the way up to Peterhead, right in Scotland. We had to drag all the way up there and landed up there. And of course, this was the 1st of January, I think, wasn't it?
Yes.
We were one night too late. They'd had their party the night before. The Scottish had their New Year's Eve, and the mess was a litter of empty bottles. So we just missed their party, I'm afraid. But we stayed up there a night or so and then went back home, back to base. But that was quite a successful bombing, I think that was.
Then 4th of January to Royan.
Yes, that was a tragedy, apparently, we learn after the war. This was a Royan's down towards Bordeaux in France, and there was this isolated pocket at Royan that the Americans had occupied all around, and this place was holding out with a lot of guns, etc. And they wanted to take it because they wanted to get the, I think they wanted to get the estuary clear so they could bring supplies in down to the south, further south in France. And we were ordered to bomb. Well, an American intelligence man said he'd heard from the French that all the civilians had been evacuated from the town and the Germans had taken it over. So, like, based on that information, we were sent out to bomb the town and get rid of this German garrison there, which was a relatively an easy trip, of course, down the French coast. France was nearly all occupied then, and down the Atlantic coast they had been occupied for quite a while. And we bombed it easily. I mean, there was no opposition virtually. And it's learned afterwards that the French were still in the town and we killed no end of French people, which was one of those tragedies that we always occurring in the war, wasn't it?
Then 5th of January on Houffalize again?
Yes, that's the same thing. I remember this time we couldn't really see, because Ken was a bit keen. We couldn't see I said, I can't see the target indicators very clear, Ken. I just not much of a glow through the cloud. He said, well, we'll go down low. I think we went out about 3,000 feet and picked them up and bombed there, which was a bit low, really, because you could get some army anti-aircraft fire from that height. But that went all right, apart from that.
Then 8th of January on Munich again?
Yes, that was quite an event, that was. Munich again, and we were what they call supporting that night. Well, when the Pathfinders first dropped their flares, which was several minutes before the main force were called in, they usually had a force of supporters fly 2,000 feet below them to take some of the flak off them so they could have a steady run to drop the flares. Well, that night we were chosen as supporters. And a lot of people weren't very well on time that night. We were on time because by that time we'd got another navigation aid called Loran, which was used at night, and that was which I operated as a bomber. I was sitting next to the navigator, and they used to jam that quite a lot, mind you, but we got quite good at reading through the jamming, and we got one or two good fixes, and we were bang on time at Munich, and I don't think anybody else was, because I can always remember when I was got to leave the Loran set and go down and get ready for bombing. Old Lou grabbed the flak and said, don't you come through here. He said, you want to see the flak? It was colossal. We were going across the sky with a contrail behind, and the flak was terrific. And obviously at that height, because the Pathfinders were above us, and we got hit on the starboard engine, went out at the feather of the engine. Flak came through my perspex in the bomb aims compartment and tore my sleeve of my battle dress, and we were in a pile of muddles. And the pilot, then the searchlight came on, and he was blinded nearly, and he pulled the nose right up, and I can hear Tom Gatfield, the navigator, shouting out the airspeed, 120, 110, get that ruddy nose down, because about 105 with the bomb load on, we'd have stalled. Ken managed to get the nose down, and because then we hadn't bombed then, because you had to go to, when you were supporting, you went across the target, circled and came back and did your bombing run. Well, we came down and round, and by that time they'd marked the target, and on three engines we were still, of course. And we bombed the target, and amazingly enough, I've got my bomb photograph. My was 250 yards from the aiming point, which is quite good, really. And so we had three engines, and we know we had to keep up somewhere about 14,000, because we were using the Alps as a screen coming back. We skirted across Switzerland.